All right, everybody, welcome to the Ghostly Archives podcast. This is Melissa, your host, and we're covering an interesting topic today. We are going to talk about a story that I have about a demonic attachment that began to follow a very devout Catholic girl, and I believe it took place in the 1960s, and she had this bizarre experience one Sunday after church. But before we do the story, what I want to do is go over the basics of demonic possession, briefly mention exorcism. I'm not going to go into the rites of that. We're going to kind of outline it, how the Catholic Church believes it. And it's very 101, so I'm not a theologian, so feel free to put some comments in and add your perception. But before we get into that, we've got to do some homework. We've got to tidy up and make sure you guys are up to date on what's going on. Good news, I got the URL, ghostlyarchives.com. So before it was melissadawneclectic.com, that was my old URL that I had. And I thought, you know, Melissa, you need to be more communicative. You can't have a podcast called Ghostly Archives and send these people to melissadawneclectic.com. That's confusing. So the new URL, and I've put it all over all my social media, is Ghostly Archives, plural, ghostlyarchives.com. That'll be in the show notes. We are also on almost all the social media platforms, so be sure to follow. All the links are in there. There's a Facebook page, a Facebook group, Instagram, TikTok. Also, I'm on X, but X is a lot more political. I've got a big audience there. Be sure to follow me over there. When I do any kind of live streaming, the live streaming will happen via YouTube and then X. And then I'll take that recording and then get it up on the podcast platform later. So I've got a fair size audience on X, so a lot of the live streaming interaction will take place there. I do plan to have like a guest once or twice a month, maybe a round table where everyone talks about a certain topic, mixed in with, of course, these pre-recorded stories that I'm collecting on ghostly events or, like today, demonic possession. Okay, so that's it. Go to ghostlyarchives.com. All the social media links are there, or I'll put them in the show notes here, and you can be sure to follow me. First things first, what is a demon? Did you know that the word possesses more S's than any other word in the English language? The great and late director William Friedkin pointed this out in the documentary Leap of Faith, which you can get on Shudder, by the way. Really good documentary. And he was examining in this documentary, of course, his film The Exorcist that he made in 1973. Possession of the human is the ultimate goal of the demon, so it's essential to start by examining what actually is a demon and why does it seek to possess a human being? Like, what's going on? So we're obviously coming at this from a Christian tradition, more specifically Catholic. There are also a lot of other traditions and religious beliefs in our wonderfully diverse planet that says probably similar things about demon, but has different takes as well. We're going the Christian route. We're going the Catholic route in this podcast today. So in Christianity, demons are fallen angels with the same characteristics as their good angel counterparts, which essentially means they have a spirituality, immutability, and immortality. They are not, however, omniscient. They have specific knowledge, so they don't have all-encompassing knowledge, and that's important to remember. They have specific knowledge, sometimes on more than one subject, but they're not all knowing wisdom. So their power is limited to which God allows. So they're not omnipotent. Remember that. It's really important because people are very afraid of demons, but they're not omnipotent. They're not omnipresent. You know, they can't be everywhere all at once in the same way that God is. So it is unclear if they can actually be places simultaneously. I don't think they can. I think they're either, most demons are, can't, maybe the devil, maybe Satan can be in different places simultaneously. But I think more likely there's like basically a plethora of demons and they kind of do tag team and they switch off. I think there's multiple demons and they're working together, but they're also immortal. So they've got a lot of energy. So they've got a lot of time. And so they can take as much time as they need to mess with humans. Now, the fallen angel that leads them all, of course, is Satan, who was known as Lucifer before God dispelled him to the bowels of hell. And what was his sin? To be prideful, attempt to become God, refuse to serve humankind, and he waged war against God. Lucifer convinced a third of the angels to side with him against God. So they too were expelled to hell along with their dark king Satan. Before his fall, Lucifer was at the top of the hierarchy of angels. Some parts of scripture claim that Lucifer was a cherub, while others reference him as a seraphim, which makes sense because that's the top of the hierarchy in terms of the choir of angels. So I have also written a blog post about this, and in that post I include a infographic of the 9 choirs of angels, so you can see where the angels lie beneath God. And of course Lucifer was at the top, and he was dispelled to hell for his rebellion against God and wanting to be God. So that is essentially demons or fallen angels. So why do demons want to possess us? So the definition of possession is the state of having, owning, or controlling something. And of course, in this case, we're talking about control. Control of one's environment, control of one's mind, and then of course control of one's thoughts and their body by a demonic force. The notion is pretty straightforward. Demons are bitter, and they resent God's love of human. Demons resent that we are made in the image of God. They resent that they cannot have a physical body. And most of all, they resent God himself. Possession is a demon's way of entering God's creation and leading that human astray so they can take more of us away from God's light. You know the saying, misery loves company? We all know that one. Well, with demons under the command of Satan, this gets to the gist of it. The more they can lead away from heaven, the more people they can lead away from heaven, the more they believe they strike at God. And, you know, when you turn from the light and you're in darkness, when you see someone who is trying to be with the light, it enrages you. It enrages the demon. Now, it's important to know that demons, as much as they hate human beings, they have that in common. That's what unites them. They also hate themselves and each other, just as much, if not more, but they are united in their hatred against humans. But they're not omnipotent, remember. We said that before. They're not omnipresent the way God is. So demons will use trickery, lies mixed with truth, and focus on our weaknesses to fool us against God. Whereas God obviously knows all information, demons only know a little bit. You have specific areas that they know. And so they trick you that way, thinking that they know more than God, but they never do. Okay, so what is the process of demonic infestation? It's important to note that you see this in horror movies. I was reading the book Exorcism, The Battle Against Satan and His Demon by Father Vincent Lampert. I have to finish it, but I was well on my way. I'm not a priest, but Father Vincent is, so I took a couple of hints from him and other context online and what I've already known to sort of present this. So I'm not going to go into the rites of exorcism. I'm just going to go into the process of infestation. Of course, the rites of exorcism has to be done by a priest, and a priest will always have you psychologically and physically, medically evaluated, and he'll have a team working with him before they ever even consider exorcism. Just note that. So I'm not your doctor. I'm not your priest. we're just having a discussion here. So before we get into that, what I think is important to know right now is that a demon can never actually possess your soul. And why do you ask that? Why can't they? I thought that's what they were doing, right? You don't own your soul. God does. So the demon can't possess the soul. It's always under God. But what a demon can do is create an abundance of emotional, psychological, and physical and spiritual turmoil for you in the meantime that breaks you down. But they can never take your soul. So you can't sign a contract with the devil for your soul. God always has dominion over that. So a demon operates from a dimension of non-physical, and they use trauma or certain activities that you might be doing here as entryways into your environment and your mind. And it will happen in this process. Often you hear a 3-stage process, but Father Vincent discussed a 4-stage process. And it as follows. Stage 1 is in infestation. Stage 2 is oppression. Stage 3, the one you don't hear about very much, is obsession. And then, of course, stage 4 is full-on possession. So let's get into each one of these stages. Infestation is usually marked by what one might call paranormal phenomena. It might feel like that at first. Knocks and bangs around the house, items moving on their own, items going missing, electronics constantly breaking for no reason. You can even start to see strange apparitions or feel this sense of dread around your house, like something's not quite right. Often, the person of focus has been unwittingly participating in activities like a Ouija board, drugs. They could have been in an abusive relationship. They could have had a recent trauma, a horrible event, a family breakup. They could have been sexually abused themselves, amongst many other elements. But they don't have a foundation, and they don't have stability. And for whatever reason, these things can allow an entryway for the first step to begin, which is infestation. And I believe that infestation is meant to frighten the humans and give the demon more leeway for their next step. It's sort of a breakdown. Of course, the next step is oppression, and that occurs once the demon has instilled enough fear in the first stage and they gain more power. So it's kind of like a vampire trying to get access into your house, and you let them in unwittingly and they start to gain more power over you. Same thing with the demon. They begin to oppress your thoughts and the body of, well, obviously the individual. You may see an increase in depression and anxiety in individuals. Their personality will start to slowly change to someone who is less recognizable. You'll see like, wow, there's something wrong. There's something different. They may begin to hear voices telling them to do terrible things. Note, depression will be explained. The depression that you experience will not be explained by ordinary things like a seasonal affective disorder or a sudden change in life like moving. It'll be seemingly out of nowhere. It could, like I said, come from a trauma, but it'll be unlike that person's personality. There are people who have depression regularly, but it'll be very unusual. And you'll notice the difference. Also, people who are listening, if you see this, also, especially if you have teenagers, check your kids' internet. Always be wary of who they're talking to, because people on the internet are kind of like demons. And if they're targeting your children, you will notice a change in your child's behavior. So be aware of that as well, not just, you know, spiritual demons. it's a concern we have. So usually at this point, if someone had a medical exam, they'd appear healthy. You know, the oppression stage is meant to break down the person for further control. They would appear psychologically healthy. They'd appear medically healthy. Everyone would be like, well, there's nothing wrong. You know, maybe it's just this or this or this. Obsession, the third part, is not often mentioned. You'll hear infestation, oppression, possession. But obsession is a small little realm here where people will become obsessed with things like certain dark films, dark activities, and a lot of times they'll start to stalk people. They'll become obsessed with other people. It might be a celebrity, it might be a girl that they liked, a boy. They'll obsess And some of these people either end up stalking and attacking. When they're between obsession and full-on possession, they'll actually, you know, murder someone. This is the small step before full-on possession. Also, other people in the household might begin to see strange things. They're not being possessed, but they're seeing, you know, the bed shaking. They might see a shadow figure, an old hag. They might start having like, wow, they might start seeing manifestations and weird stuff that they didn't see before. Now, the fourth stage of full-on possession, this can go on for a while. And you can also cycle through these stages. Like, not everybody, it's not like The Exorcist where they stay that way. Some people go into full-on possession and they go back into obsession or back into just repression. Or, you know, or it might leave and go stagnant and then it comes back. So full-on possession means that the person, when possessed, is taken over by the demonic entities or entities, you know. Like I said before, I think sometimes they do tag team. And it sort of tricks the human to believe something's different. And it's meant to envelop the human being by different little critters of evil. So the criteria of this is the person will be able to speak in tongues or languages they never knew. They will display knowledge or information that could never be available to them. They may have disfiguration of the body and have sudden cuts and scarring appear and disappear. Writing forms on their skin will sometimes occur. Foul odors coming from the individual. Foul language being used. Objects being hurled as weapons. In extreme cases, of course, very rare. There's been reports, it's never been recorded, that some individuals will experience some levitation. Many people will stop eating and may even participate in self-harm or mutilation. There's probably a plethora of other criteria and symptoms, but as you can tell, it gets pretty extreme. And the person, their thoughts and their mind is just taken over by something that's totally evil. There was a story on a show called Ghostly Encounters, and it was a woman who had a pretty traumatic childhood, dysfunctional family, and an eating disorder, and she was suffering from the old hag. And some of the attacks were awful. I believe it was a demon, and she actually eventually, she did a shamanic removal, and I think that's just as legit, but it worked. It helped her. And the night before, she went to do the shamanic removal, all hell broke loose with this old hag shadow entity that was attacking her. It was really traumatic for her and very crazy. But that happens, that they'll, when they know they're threatened, the demon will act up most. It will play games. It will go quiet, but it will actually try to appear really frightening and scary the longer or the more threatened it is by people realizing it exists and it's there. So obviously, the earlier one cuts off these original activities that cause the infestation, the earlier you can do it, obviously, the better. It won't, you know, get into these advanced stages. I'm not a priest, obviously. I've said this before. So you have to contact one. And like I said, they would probably start with a complete psychological and medical evaluation to determine things like tumors, epilepsy, different emotional problems that could be happening, mental health issues. But remember, on the blog post that I have of this podcast, I show you the hierarchy of choirs of angels, and the angels at the bottom are kind of like our spirit sort of angels or guiding angels. Those are the ones we're supposed to call to in the hierarchy to help you. So you can, that's, and you have to believe that they're there. You can't just be like, oh, okay, angel, come on. Yeah, all right. No, you have to really believe it and experience it. So you can call to those. You can go, I'll put the link to the article that I wrote up of this in the show notes as well. All right, so do you want to hear the story that I have for you guys? I thought so. Let's get to it. It was the 1970s, and Deanie had moved into an old Victorian flat and regularly visited her neighbor for tea, talk, and a cigarette. On this one particular day, Deanie begins to tell the young neighbor that she has a dark entity that follows her. The declaration is met with skepticism and interest, so the young neighbor tells her to continue the story. Deanie was raised a strict Catholic and attended church regularly. When she was a teenager, she came home on a Sunday after service feeling exhausted and decided to have an afternoon nap. During her nap, Deanie began to have a terrifying dream that a very close friend was in a car accident and had died. She awoke from the dream feeling very disturbed. She tried to shake it off as just a silly dream, but it would stay impressed in her mind. Eventually, as a few days passed and nothing happened, she began to forget the nightmare and get on with everyday life. However, about a week later, on yet another Sunday, Deanie received the news that her friend had indeed just died in a fatal car accident. Deanie was beside herself with grief, and she felt fear that she had seen the events in a dream, almost prophetically. It was something that didn't mesh with her religious teachings. In her grieving, Deanie exclaimed to her young listener, "It was at this time that she began to feel the presence of something in her bedroom. Initially, she felt a feeling of comfort, as if whatever it was alleviating her pain. It told her future scenarios, more often to be careful of certain events. But soon, the presence began to become darker. They whispered terrible words in her ear, telling her bad things about herself. Her life began to spiral into bleak depression, and she felt like this entity followed her around everywhere, draining her energy and exhausting her. Eventually, she stopped attending church with her family and went into adulthood to lead a life full of, sadly, abusive relationships, multiple marriages that never worked. At this point, Deanie stops her story and looked up at her young neighbor, who was sitting with a look of bewilderment. Deanie sipped on her tea and took a puff of her cigarette, paused, and then told her neighbor, "You know, I think it's here right now watching us." As you can imagine, that did not sit well with the young girl, and as the story was related to me, the young girl could feel a change in the room. She looked to the back porch and could sense something standing there, watching and breathing. The girl became upset and quickly left to get her mother. She brought her mother back down to Deanie's apartment, and they related the story to her. To make them feel better, the mother of this young girl replicated a casting out of the spirit and demanded it to leave. It satisfied both Deanie and the young teen for a time. That evening, the teen was up in her flat, in her bedroom, trying to sleep, when suddenly she felt someone was in her room. She looked, but she could see nothing. So she returned to sleep. Then the young girl felt as if someone had come up to her and was trying to sit on the bed. She looked again and could see the impression as if someone was sitting right beside her in her bed. She started to scream for her father, but it was as if no one could hear her. After a few seconds more of terror, she finally got courage to jump out of bed and run out into the living room where her father was relaxing, watching TV. She screamed at him hysterically for not helping her when she had called out, but he said he hadn't heard a thing. She explained her story, but her father just thought she was dreaming. But she knew it was Deanie's entity coming down to bother her. There were several other creepy instances that would happen in this flat, including strange breathing and just this presence that would suddenly show up and go away. Over time, the experiences seemed to fade away, and this young girl eventually had moved out of her parents' house to a city far away. A few years later, she returned. She had been pregnant, and she decided to live with her parents. It hadn't worked out with the man that she was with, and Deanie had since moved away from this flat, but she was able to contact her and asked her to be her baby's godmother for baptism. Deanie exclaimed that indeed her entity still showed up from time to time, but it would seem that it was more potent at points of severe challenge or trauma in her life. After this meeting and the baptism and, you know, a reconnection of friendship, the two had parted ways and parted life paths, and we can only assume that Deanie still had that entity around, maybe even till this day. Now, that was a story, and we have to ask, like, do demons even exist? And it's a good question to ask. I've just told you a story where someone had a dream, a premonition, and this young girl, Deanie, seemed to, for whatever reason, on that day, be exposed to some sort of force that was acting helpful at first, like, hey, I'm giving you information. And it would, at first, it was being helpful, and then it switched. I like to call that the demonic bait and switch, which happens quite frequently in possession cases like this, where it's like, hey, you know, we're giving you this, and then they switch. Narcissistic personalities do that kind of stuff all the time. And you could say she had some Catholic guilt, she had some shame, she might have had some stuff, she could have made it all up out of guilt, possibly. But I don't know. I think something really fascinating happens here, and there's a lot of people who do believe in demons. And so, in the context that she believes that something's following her, and it had been, and other people clearly experienced it as well, I think it's important to acknowledge that, hey, let's see what's going on here. Now, in this case, it doesn't seem to have ever gotten to a full-on possession. It seems to be staggering between infestation and a little bit of oppression. It doesn't actually fully develop. I don't know why that is, but it never gets into that, so that Deanie's full on, you know, Linda Blair, for a lack of a better example. But the psychological ramifications, and it's interesting that it also brings up the question, like, do certain families have weird attachments to them? Like, if you're having bad relationships, Is it even bigger picture? You know, you have to question the culture at large. There was a lot of sexual revolution and weird changes happening in the 70s that I think opened people up to, I don't know, weird forces that have been affecting us ever since. So then there's the question of, is the culture at large infested by weird, strange demons that they're being controlled by? With, you know, rampant sexualization. Just look around today. You see, it's so strange. It's so unhealthy and addictive. You know, addiction is obsession, really. And we have it in amounts that, you know, it's just devastating today. So you got to wonder if there's different levels in the culture where this is happening and the demons are just sort of given rein now, even by our tops of the culture. You know, a lot of democratic progressive people are literally all for some of the crazy stuff that would have been called demonic possession back in the day. You know, they say that the greatest trick that the devil ever pulled was to make us believe he doesn't exist. And I kind of agree with that one. It's very perplexing. But before I close off this podcast, I want to just say that a lot, oftentimes, just like in the story, we focus on the terrifying evil and the horrible demon. We don't realize how weak and powerless they actually are. That's why they're doing all this crazy stuff. They've shunned God, and it's better to focus on Jesus and God than it is to focus on the demon. It's better to focus on these light elements. It's like saying positive thinking, but you're actually focusing on Jesus and God. Because if you ever come up against someone, I had a friend who was a self-proclaimed exorcist, and she always acted like she was ridding the demons and she was all powerful. That's dangerous. That's actually highly narcissistic. Any priest that comes in and is doing work, and they'll do it in a team of people, like I said, and they'll have people give you a whole evaluation, they know they're not doing the work. Jesus and God are doing the work. That's the only one who can dispel the demon, either send him back to hell. I don't know, maybe the demon can face the light and become an angel again and repent. I have no idea exactly how it goes. Let me know what you think on that. But the important part is to focus on the love of God. And that can be hard with when you have trauma, perhaps like this young girl did, or other people who get possessed when you've had a maybe abusive life or negative things happen to you. It can be really difficult to focus on love. I know, I've been there. It's hard. It can be hard to focus on positive stuff. But the one thing that I've learned is we focus too much on the demon and not enough on the love of God. And that will dispel everything. So with that, everybody, I'm ending my story. Please remember to go to the website, ghostlyarchives.com. and subscribe. Join the mailing list, the newsletter. Hopefully I will be sending more content out. Subscribe to all the social media. I'll have the links in this platform. And please do leave comments about your experiences or send me any experiences you've had. My email is makeseventiesgreat@gmail.com. It is obviously at the website, but that's makeseventiesgreat@gmail.com if you want to email any experiences you've had or any stories you've heard. I'm all ears. Until next time, this is Melissa at the Ghostly Archives. Thank you.